You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we examine the first San Francisco police shooting of 2019.
We believe in trying to evade these officers, he does run toward one officer, at which point this officer shoots him.
And the politics of the case, as the new DA promises a more stringent line on police use of force, even as his campaign rival must take charge of the investigation before he is even sworn in.
The District Attorney's Independent Investigations Bureau is taking the lead on this, and this is the first time the DA's office is ever taking the lead on a police shooting. And so it'll be interesting to see how the District Attorney handles this, especially that the District Attorney's office is under the control right now of interim District Attorney Susie Loftus.
I'm Mel Baker. This is Civic. Welcome to Civic. I'm Mel Baker, filling in for Laura Wenis. On this edition, we look at the first officer-involved shooting in San Francisco since June 2018. 24-year-old Jamaica Hampton was struck by several rounds fired by San Francisco police officers on December 7th, who were pursuing him after police allege he took part in a burglary in the Mission District. New video evidence uncovered by Mission Local is bringing into question the officer's use of force in a story reported by Abraham Rodriguez, Julian Mark, and Joe Eskenazi. In the studio with us is Julian Mark to tell us more. So, Julian, welcome back to Civic.
Thank you.
Let's take a look at what you've uncovered based on a video that showed the street scene as police were pursuing this man.
So what we saw essentially was a foot chase and officers essentially trying to cut off Hampton. They're both ahead of Hampton. Essentially, they're weaving between cars and Hampton is, you know, just essentially trying to evade them, getting in stances where he may break either way. And so he starts on one sidewalk closest to the Bank of America, or he's on one sidewalk on 23rd Street closest to Bank of America. And then he crosses the street to the opposite sidewalk on the north end of the street and is essentially running away from one officer. At one point, he is between two officers. One officer is behind him and the other officer is in front. And we believe in trying to evade these officers, he does run toward one officer, at which point this officer shoots him.
So this is the officer that he's allegedly running in the direction of is the one that opens fire.
That's what I saw in the video, yes.
Okay, and the other officer has his or her weapon drawn but does not fire.
That's unclear. I was not able to ascertain whether or not the other officer fired, but that is a possibility. It's there was no sound on the video that we saw, so at this point it's unclear whether one or both officers fired their guns and how many times they had at that point.
And again, so how many rounds were fired and how many struck Mr. Hampton?
Witnesses have basically corroborated that it was 8 to 10 shots that were ultimately fired, and we know that not all 8 to 10 of them hit Mr. Hampton. Our reporting shows that a medical professional at San Francisco General Hospital asserted that Hampton had been shot mostly in the lower half of his body. Although I'm loath to say just how many times he was hit at this point, but I do know that not all of them hit him.
Now, police also allege that at some point prior to what we see in the video, that they tried to detain him for something, a burglary or some other incident.
Correct.
And that he struck an officer.
Yeah, so first of all, in the video, if my memory serves, Hampton does have a bottle in his hand or some kind of object in his hand, and that is what the police have reported, confirmed that Hampton was using as a weapon. We spoke to a witness just perhaps an hour after the incident, and the store manager said that she saw an officer with a very bloodied face, bleeding, perhaps bruised, and he looked like he had been hit with some kind of object.
All right. So police may have had a reason to pursue him, to be pursuing him with greater force than somebody who is just running from a crime scene.
Well, yes. I mean, perhaps, I don't know if it necessarily, yes, if he assaulted an officer, I believe that they had even probably perhaps more reason to go after him with a bit more vigor.
So another element of this story is that this wasn't just a half-block pursuit. This occurred over several blocks. Can you kind of give us a sense of where, in general, it occurred in Mission?
So police, they said almost immediately after the shooting that the alleged burglary occurred at 23rd and Cap Street. However, the video that we saw actually shows officers running toward Cap Street and chasing Hampton toward Cap Street. So it may have happened that, they may have been running around, but the crime, the alleged crime and the alleged assault happened somewhere else, before the shooting occurred.
Witnesses have been saying that they did see the officer was wounded. The pursuit was going on. Officers are having their weapons drawn the whole time. He may have been armed with a bottle, but there was no evidence he had a long-range weapon of any kind that would have immediately been a threat. That kind of paints the scene. What else do we know about the way the incident ended? How many shots were fired? Do we know what angles, where he was wounded, etc.?
So it's our understanding that Hampton was shot three times, and it was in the lower half of his body. I'm loath to say just how many times he was hit. Three times is what we heard. We heard that, and a lot of witnesses have corroborated, that 8 to 10 shots were fired in total. So it hasn't been confirmed how many times those Hampton was actually hit.
So let's fast forward to Friday morning, which is this morning. What do we know about his condition at this time? Where is he? What is his legal situation?
I believe that he is still in at San Francisco General Hospital. I heard that he is in critical condition. The last we checked, he was in critical condition, but stable condition. He has been booked on a slew of charges, assaulting an officer, the burglary charge, the chief said that he is not at this moment in custody. He said that Chief Bill Scott said that at Wednesday night's police commission meeting.
So we now know what happened. Let's talk a little bit about what we know about this 24-year-old man at this point.
So in a protest on Tuesday night at Mission Station, the mother of Jamaica Hampton made a surprise appearance and asked to speak. She identified the young man and that he was 24 years old. And she revealed that he was in a recovery program, a city team, which is a religious organization that helps people in poverty, get their feet. That there was actually, in fact, a YouTube video of him as kind of this shining example of what City Team is able to do. He looks like he's a very large man. He has a tattoo on his neck. He looks like he may have had a rough life, but in the video he looks very good. So it just, it's a contrast to the man that witnesses and police officers saw on Saturday morning, and who this man perhaps was trying to be in his life.
And we'll play a little clip of that video now.
Growing up, it was tough. I don't know, I remember being like homeless a lot. It seemed normal at the time. My mom being homeless, dragging us with her, and growing up in just a drug house, all kinds of people in and out of it, and pretty much being raised there until I was like 12. I wasn't really aware of what my mom was doing, I guess. I didn't know she was on drugs. As a kid, you don't know what's normal. So around the age of 12, I entered the foster care system, and me and my siblings were split up. I carried that over as an adult. My anxieties and everything kind of stemmed from my childhood traumas. My drinking and everything started when I was 21. I was depressed, I tried to kill myself, and I ended up pushing everybody away, and I ended up becoming homeless. Not really knowing how to get out of the situation I was in. didn't know there was like a place like City Team. I want to help the kids that were in my situation and maybe just try to be a role model to them. I could be an example of what not to do also, but also an example of how to get back on your feet.
So now we know a little bit about the person that was shot. Now let's put this all in context. There hasn't been a police shooting in San Francisco, an officer-involved shooting, since June of last year. So let's talk a little bit about the implications of that. Has that been a general decrease in the number of officer-involved shootings? That's pretty remarkable. At all of 2019, this is the first officer-involved shooting.
It is incredibly remarkable. This gap in police shootings is something that has been celebrated, I think, by a lot, by people on all sides of this issue. The police department is very, obviously very proud of this. I believe that they themselves do not want to have these police shootings. They want to reduce the amount of these. Activists, I'm sure, are very happy about this. The last one happened in North Beach in June 2018. It did not kill the guy. But the officer did shoot him on the back on a crowded sidewalk, which was definitely not a good look for the police department. I think this is attributable to, you know, a number of things, which is the San Francisco Police Department's new use of force policy, which talks about de-escalation and proportionality of force with suspects, and the necessity of force with people who they're trying to use they have to encounter. And then the other thing is the fact that, everybody has a cell phone now. And officers, I believe, do not want to be the next officer who is on a viral video. So this is, I think that there are a number of things at play. And so hopefully this is, this won't, you know, that there won't be another one. This will be the only one for a while.
We were speaking with Julian Mark from Mission Local about the most recent shooting by San Francisco police officers in San Francisco. We'll continue in a moment. I'm Mel Baker, filling in for Laura Wenis. This is Civic.
The San Francisco Public Press and KSFP rely on support from readers and listeners like you. That's why we're excited to participate in Newsmatch, a national collaboration of journalism funders. Newsmatch will double donations from individuals to the public press through the end of the year. Your pledge will support independent, diverse local perspectives and investigative reporting. Visit sfpublicpress.org/donate.
This is KSFP LP, San Francisco. Welcome back to Civic. We're speaking with Julian Mark from Mission Local about a recent San Francisco police officer-involved shooting in San Francisco, the first in 2019. So, Julian, this really has implications, political implications, all over the map. Chesa Boudin won a surprise election to the district attorney seat in San Francisco and has promised a much different approach to how he's going to pursue officers involved in shootings. Is it going to be a big sea change from the previous positions in the department?
Yes, that's correct. Boudin will, definitely bring a fresh new look to these. He has said in the past that he would have charged the Mario Wood shooting, which he believes, he said that there is no other way he can look at that as some kind of criminally chargeable act. But there are questions. I mean, a district attorney can only do what the law allows him to do, and we are still under what is called the Graham versus Connor Supreme Court standard.
Yeah, let's clarify that a little bit. So the state did pass a much stricter rule about how the use of force by police in California, but that doesn't go into effect until January 1st. So kind
That's
of
correct.
Explain that a little more. What is the current standard and how is that standard going to shift?
At a national level, there is an officer, essentially, if they say they feared for their life, or the life of another person, or the harm of another person, or their own harm, they are justified in using deadly force. Now, California passed a law this year that changes that standard from reasonable force to only using force when it is necessary. And that is to say, until all other essentially until all other reasonable alternatives are exhausted. Officers now are held by the standard of only using force when they believe deadly force is necessary. So Jamaica Hampton running with a bottle in his hand and maybe not running directly at the officer with his hand held with the bottle and striking the officer, maybe that is maybe that's where force is reasonably justified or necessarily justified. But Hampton running toward the officer and past him may not, you know, hold up to the legal scrutiny of necessary force. However, that's a moot point because the law is not in effect yet.
Right. So under the old standard, there would probably be very few questions about this shooting. Under the new standard that will take place at the first of the year, this might well come under a stronger scrutiny. So it's an interesting divide. This case could, in fact, be one of the last officer-involved shootings under the old statute. We don't know that, but it could be one. It's certainly one of the last.
It would be. It very well could be, and I hope that it is. And Boudin will have a big decision to make. He will have to look at this very carefully. This is the first fresh case that he will be reviewing and making a charging decision on, and it will definitely show that even a, for lack of a better word, a crusader like Chesa Boudin, I think people will definitely see the limits that, you know, somebody who is like Boudin has under the law.
So let's continue looking at what we know about the police officers at this point. In general, do we have any reporting on them?
We don't know their names, their ranks. That will be released in time. My understanding in talking to witnesses and just doing some reporting afterwards is that, well, at least one of the men was a very young officer. In his 20s, I believe. And the other, I've heard conflicting reports. I heard that, you know, that both were very young. But I also heard, I've been hearing rumors that one was a training officer and the other officer was a rookie.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting to find out. What do we know about the SFPD's implementation of the training on the new policy? Has there been additional training to get people up to speed for the new limits? Has that been in place for a while? Do we have any reporting on that?
San Francisco is actually more trained and primed for this new use of force policy the new AB 392 law, because San Francisco's use of force policy is very similar to that, to the law anyway, in their policy. It was a policy that was passed in, I believe, December 2016, and it does talk about all of these things that are pretty much contained in the new use of force standards. So proportionality, you know, if a man has a bottle, then it shouldn't be a gun versus bottle kind of situation. You should do all that you can to essentially avoid having to use deadly force. Now, if a guy has a gun and he's, you know, he looks like he's going to use it and you have a reasonable fear that, you know, he will use it, then yes, I believe that is, you know, the officers are protected under the law.
So in broad strokes, that's kind of where the new policy will fall.
Exactly.
What do we know about the activist community? There's already been a rally about this. What are people in the who monitor police alleged overuse of force, what are they saying at this time, and what are their plans?
Well, you know, really, I think what I was at the police commission on Wednesday night, and really, I think where the frustration is the communication between the police department and the community following these shootings. I think one prominent activist got in front of the commission and said, "We want to know. Please give us the names of the officers. Please tell us what happened. I mean, we are in the dark here, and we would like to have at least some clarity on what happens." And I know that there's a lot of frustration around the language that the police department uses. They give this account, and then they give this sentence that always seems to come up, which is an officer-involved shooting occurred. And that really just, it leaves a lot of people in the dark, and I think it leaves a lot of people very frustrated. And what I sensed was, yes, I sensed a lot of frustration.
So what is the SFPD saying in response to that, or has there been nothing more than from the general press conference and the the press release. There's no further evidence as of this point being released.
Yeah, so basically the line of the police department right now is wait for the so-called town hall meeting, which will be coming up on Tuesday at Cesar Chavez Elementary, where the police department has actually been very good about showing videos of these shootings at these town hall meetings. Chief Bill Scott has been very good about being transparent in this way. In all of the town halls that I've covered so far, they have released the body-worn camera footage of the officers, and they've shown other video, even though it actually has been quite damning of the police department. That's what they are saying. They're saying, come to the town hall, and you will find out.
So that also brings up the point of evidence. Now, we're not asking for your source for this video, but we can presume it's not the police body cam video, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to be seeing the police body cam video and presumably other video that's been collected from street cameras of whatever sort or another may be what some of the evidence SFPD will present.
You know, I can't list out exactly the criteria that the police department uses, but if it passes a certain legal threshold, then this the chief says he will release the video. At the police commission meeting on Wednesday night, he said in a lot of words that will likely happen.
So what's interesting today is that we have, in addition to police camera body cam videos, there's also video that people collect off the street from people's doorbell cameras, and that a lot of this evidence can be pieced together. So we don't know exactly what we might see or different angles we might see, different than the video you've been able to source.
Yes, the shooting occurred on 23rd Street in between Mission Street and Cap Street. So there are very few residences, I believe, in that alley. So I don't know if there's going to be doorbell footage, but there definitely is. There is footage of the incident, I believe, from multiple angles. Hopefully, I very much hope that there is body-worn camera footage of this incident.
Now, what do we know about the investigation? Usually that's carried out by another department or agency, or will SFPD Internal Investigations Unit be handling this?
So there are five concurrent investigations that go on with this, and in the past, the SFPD's homicide detail has taken the lead on this. But since about May, I think, of this year, the District Attorney's Independent Investigations Bureau, which investigates police shootings and these types of matters, is taking the lead on this. And this is the first time the DA's office is ever taking the lead on a police shooting. And they control the evidence. They they have the first crack at the interviews. And so it'll be interesting to see how the district attorney handles this, and especially that the district attorney's office is under the control right now of interim district attorney Susie Loftus. So and the office right now is not in full swing. I think a lot of people have left, and morale is questionable at the DA's office. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle this, and it'll be interesting to see what Chesaboudin does once he takes office.
Yeah. So this is a real political challenge for the district attorney's office, because Loftus is still in. She's a dead duck. She was put in by the mayor before the election so that she would cover the rest up to the beginning of the next term after George Gascon left. So the layers of complication here and speculation that she may well have lost because the mayor appointed her, and that created a lot of bad press. She may well have beat Boudin in any case, but they were definitely the two main contenders in the race. There was a lot of animosity, and yet she's the one that has to start this case for him under the old state rules about use of force, and then he's got to somehow pick up the investigation when he comes in January 15th?
I'm not sure the exact date that he comes in, but he does come in sometime in mid-January.
This is going to be a strange and difficult challenge, just looking at the politics of it and which prosecutors get assigned to the case, et cetera.
Now, you know, this is another thing, is that I know that sometimes investigatory agencies, the leader of these agencies sometimes actually do not want to know the particulars of the case and don't have a close hand in the investigation process until investigators are ready to present evidence. So it's actually unclear whether or not how close Susie Loftus is controlling this investigation, and whether or not the Independent Investigations Bureau is doing its thing right now. And I'm sure that she is being briefed, and I'm sure that she is, directing it somehow. But it's unclear how much she has her hand in this.
But you did point out that this is the first time the DA's office itself is going to have first crack at all of the interviews, et cetera. So there will be some investigative work done at the lower levels, but then the follow-on and the next steps will be directly under what is now still her office.
I believe so. These investigations take years. They take a lot of effort. I think what I believe is that this first time investigation. The first time the DA is doing this function is under a, you know, as you put it, you know, kind of in the middle of all of these political tides. So how efficiently this is being done, how effectively this is being done, I have questions about that.
So what more can you tell us about Mission Local's reporting that we haven't pointed out? What are some of the other aspects of this investigation that you think will be really interesting to keep an eye on as we go forward?
Well, what I want to say is that, you know, having looked deeply at investigative files that have been released under another transparency law, that early on there is the so-called fog of war. Nobody really knows what's going on. There are a lot of emotions on both sides. There's a lot of pent up anger in communities that have been affected by police violence. So I think that, you know, right now we just don't know, you know, we there it's just so unclear, you know, what happened. Even though we were able to see the shooting take place, we don't know what happened before, and we don't know, you know, there's just so much is unclear, and it's going to take quite a while to really understand the circumstances of this shooting and to really understand what exactly happened. The media, activists, even the community, you know, everybody wants to just jump to these conclusions, and everybody wants answers quickly, and the police are not giving them. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on, and really understanding how these things shake up, it really takes time, and so we need to be patient to see what happens.
Julian, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
You can see Julian's reporting and more reporting on this at missionlocal.com. I'm Mel Baker, filling in for Laura Wenes. You've been listening to Civic. Civic is a production of the San Francisco Public Press, sfpublicpress.org. Your host is Laura Wenes, producer and contributor, Mel Baker. The publisher of the San Francisco Public Press is Lila LaHood. Executive Director, Michael Stoll. Interim Managing Editor, Noah Arroyo. Director of Membership and Community, Daphne Magnawa.
I'm David Keenan from Coal Valley, and I'm a member of the San Francisco Public Press and KSFP LP San Francisco. 102.5 FM. Thanks for listening.